Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up today, Joan Knows. Joan Lewis, EWTN's bureau chief here in Rome, brings us a bird's eye view of the Vatican Week. But first, Jill Bevilacqua brings us the next in her series of reflections on the Sunday Gospel by the intriguing title of There's More in the Sunday Gospel Than Meets the Eye, which begins, as always, with Sean Patrick Lovett reading this week's Gospel for us.
Jesus said to his disciples, "The coming of the Son of Man will repeat what happened in Noah's time. In the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and being married, right up to the day Noah entered the ark. They were totally unconcerned until the flood came and destroyed them. So will it be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be out in the field. One will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding meal. One will be taken and one will be left. Stay awake, therefore. You cannot know the day your Lord is coming. Be sure of this. If the owner of the house knew when the thief was coming, he would keep a watchful eye and not allow his house to be broken into. You must be prepared in the same way. The Son of Man is coming at the time you least expect."
In the first chapter of St. John's Gospel, Nathanael says to Jesus, "You are the Son of God, you are the King of Israel." And after commenting, "You believe that just because I said I saw you under the fig tree," our Lord tells him he will see much greater things. Heaven laid open, and above, the Son of Man, the angels of God, ascending and descending. This description of himself as the Son of Man is used by our Lord some 40 times, and the phrase occurs in the Gospels 80 times. After healing the man born blind, Jesus asks him if he believes in the Son of Man. "Tell me who he is, so that I may believe in him," answers the man. And Jesus, "You are looking at him. He is speaking to you." The phrase Son of Man, Barasha, is simply an idiomatic Hebrew way of saying man. And in the Old Testament, it appears many times with just that meaning. But in chapter 7 of the book of Daniel, we get, writes Frank Sheed, the mightiest and most mysterious use of the phrase. God is upon his throne, thousands upon thousands of angels ministering to him, and 10,000 times 100,000 standing before him. Then,
"I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven there came one like a Son of Man, and he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed."
This was the first of four prophetic visions Daniel received announcing the Messianic Kingdom. The Son of Man, we read in a note, is the Messiah, to whom is given the Eternal Kingdom. This passage presents the figure of a Messiah coming with the clouds of heaven, and so of heavenly origin. And this, we're told, is the messianic aspect which Jesus ascribes to himself, habitually calling himself Son of Man and describing his coming as judge on the clouds of heaven. During our Lord's life, no one but he called him by this name, and after his death and resurrection, it disappears. He had been revealed as Messiah, so it was no longer needed. In today's Gospel, Jesus foretells his second coming at the end of the world and paints a dramatic picture. In the previous verses, he likens the coming of the Son of Man to lightning, which, flashing from one part of heaven, lights up the other. The sun is darkened, the moon does not give its light, the stars fall from heaven. And to help the disciples to imagine that day of judgment, our Lord says that it will be a repeat of what happened in Noah's day.
In the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on that day all the fountains of the great deep burst forth, and the windows of the heavens were opened, and rain fell upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights. And the waters prevailed so mightily upon the earth that all the high mountains under the whole heaven were covered. The waters prevailed above the mountains, covering them 15 cubits deep, and all flesh died that moved upon the earth, birds, cattle, beasts, all swarming creatures that swarm upon the earth, and every man. Everything on the dry land in whose nostrils was the breath of life died. Only Noah was left, and those that were with him in the ark, and the waters prevailed upon the earth 150 days.
The flood, or the deluge, as it used to be called, has inspired artists throughout the ages. But although its message is serious, now and then a writer has seen the funny side of the event. Rudyard Kipling, in The Legend of Evil, has an Irishman telling the tale of Noah seeing the animals into the ark.
"'Twas when the rain fell steady and the ark was pitched and ready "'that Noah got his orders for to take the beasts below. "'He dragged them all together by the horn and hide and feather, "'and all except the donkey was agreeable to go. "'Then Noah spoke him fairly, then talked to him severely, "'and then he cursed him squarely to the glory of the Lord. "'Devil take the ass that bred you and the greater ass that fed you. "'Devil go with you, you spalpeen.' "'And the donkey went aboard. But the wind was always failing, and was most a noisy sailing, and the ladies in the cabin couldn't stand the stable air. And the beasts betwixt the hatches, and took and died in batches, till Noah said, "There's one of us that hasn't paid his fare." For he heard a flusteration with the beasts of all creation, the trumpeting of elephants and bellowing of whales, and he saw for an inst the windy when he went to stop the shindy, the devil with his stable fork bedivelling their tails. The devil cursed outrageous, but Noah said umbrageous, "To what am I indebted for this tenant right invasion?" And the devil gave for answer, "Evict me if you can, sir, for I came in with the donkey on your honour's invitation."
When the waters of the flood had subsided and Noah and his family were back on dry land, Noah planted a vine. Now, although he was the first tiller of the soil, the Bible does not say that he was the first to cultivate the vine. But agriculture historians tell us that the vine comes from Armenia, and that is where the ark is supposed to have come to rest. The art of making wine goes back to prehistory in the Near East. But Noah was not used to wine. And while he was drunk, we read in Genesis, he uncovered himself inside his tent. His youngest son, Ham, found him there and went out to tell Shem and Japhet. But they had compassion on their father, caught, as the note explains, in the sleep of involuntary drunkenness, and showing more respect than their brother, took a cloak and, walking backwards, with their faces turned away, covered their father's nakedness. This episode has often been recounted in fanciful ways, and not always to Noah's credit. But the gentle humour of G.K. Chesterton cannot but bring a smile when he suggests that Noah was well acquainted with wine, even before the flood.
Old Noah, he had an ostrich farm and fowls on the largest scale. He ate his egg with a ladle in an egg cup big as a pail. And the soup he took was elephant soup, and the fish he took was whale. But they all were small to the cellar he took when he set out to sail. And Noah, he often said to his wife when he sat down to dine, "I don't care where the water goes if it doesn't get into the wine." The cataract of the cliff of heaven fell blinding off the brink, as if it were wash the stars away as suds go down a sink. The seven heavens came roaring down for the throats of hell to drink. And Noah, he cocked his eye and said, "It looks like rain, I think. The water has drowned the Matterhorn as deep as a Mendip mine. But I don't care where the water goes if it doesn't get into the wine."
And from that light-hearted diversion to the solemn warning note sounded throughout this gospel. Stay awake, be prepared. And the disconcerting information that at the coming of the Son of Man, people will behave just as they did in the days before the flood. Totally unconcerned, eating and drinking, marrying and being married. Whenever a great disaster strikes and people are carried away in the midst of their living, for those who remain, it is always a warning. In John Donne's oft-quoted words, "Never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee." In an article about the loss of the Titanic, a journalist called it a story about the hour of our death. It's also a story of death by water. And people carrying on with their lives, unconcerned, unwilling to accept the reality, even when they've had some warning. As Walter Lord writes,
"The initial refusal to believe that anything serious is wrong, card games continuing in the smoking room, playful soccer matches on deck with chunks of ice broken from the berg, then the gradual dawning that there is real danger, and finally the realization that the end is at hand with no apparent escape."
Sixteen-year-old Jack Thayer jumped from the sinking liner and after swimming for his life, was eventually pulled onto one of the upturned lifeboats. From there, he watched the Titanic's last moments.
"Her deck was turned slightly towards us. We could see groups of the people aboard, clinging in clusters or bunches like swarming bees, only to fall in masses, pairs or singly, as the great part of the ship, 250 feet of it, rose into the sky, till it reached a 65 or 70 degree angle. Here it seemed to pause and just hung for what felt like minutes. Gradually she turned her deck away from us, as though to hide from our sight the awful spectacle."
The boat Jack was clinging to was being sucked towards the ship, and the men on her were trying desperately to row her away.
"I looked upwards. We were right under the three enormous propellers. For an instant, I thought they were sure to come right down on top of us. Then, with the deadened noise of the bursting of her last few gallant bulkheads, she slid quietly away from us, into the sea."
As the sea closed over the Titanic, there was a silence, followed almost immediately by the sound of hundreds of voices crying for help. Individual voices, writes Lord, were lost in a steady, overwhelming clamour. To Jack Thayer, lying on the keel of the lifeboat, the cries of the swimmers and others struggling for survival in the icy sea seemed like the high-pitched hum of locusts on a midsummer night in the woods back home in Pennsylvania. But long before dawn, the cries had ceased. Over 1,500 people died that April night of 1912, and yet still today people continue to wonder if only the Titanic had heeded the warnings. The end of the Titanic was not the end of the world, neither was the deluge, but the message in both events is unmistakable.
And warm thanks there to Jill Bevilacqua for bringing us this week's edition of There's More in the Sunday Gospel Than Meets the Eye. She'll be back again at the same time next week. Meanwhile, time to join Joan Lewis, EWTN's Bureau Chief here in Rome, who's about to bring us the Vatican Week in review. So, Joan, welcome back. You had an exciting Sunday.
An exciting Sunday, personally and professionally, to be honest. That was one of the two big events, of course, of the week, Sunday's Mass to close the year of faith.
And it was the Feast of Christ.
Exactly. Year. But to close the year of faith, that's more or less a formal closing. The year of faith is going to go on in parishes and dioceses and so forth throughout the world. But on Sunday, at the end of Mass, the Holy Father consigned his first solo document, if you will, because the encyclical Lumen Fidei was basically, much of it was written, and he acknowledged it, much of it was written by his predecessor, Benedict XVI. But on Sunday, the Pope consigned copies of his newest document, which was made public only Tuesday, Evangelii Gaudium, an apostolic exhortation, to 36 people representing all walks and callings of life.
The joy of the gospel.
The Joy of the Gospel translation, thank you. I was among those 36 people to receive the exhortation from the hands of the Pope, and it was a very exciting moment. I was joined by another Spanish-language journalist as we received the exhortations on behalf of all the journalists of the world. But I have to tell you personally, what so moved me at that moment, your mind is just reeling from the event, the beauty, of course, of a Mass, the significance of the day, the significance of the document. But to go up those stairs and receive this very beautiful document from the Holy Father, all I could think of was earlier in the Creed, Pope Francis had held a reliquary in his hands containing bone fragments of the first pope, of St. Peter, of his predecessor. And all I could think of in that moment of shaking the Pope's hand, I don't know if I thought this before or after I actually shook his hand and got the document, but all I could think of was, wow, 2,000 years of history in a pair of hands. This man, the successor of Peter, who held the bones of his predecessor, St. Peter, and then he's giving us this document that he himself wrote. So a very, very meaningful day, and that was the first time in the history of the Church that these bone fragments have been for the public to see. Actually, the public could only see the reliquary and the newspaper.
Casket.
This casket has the inscription, "Remains found in the hypogeum of the Vatican Basilica and believed to be of the Blessed Apostle Peter." And interestingly enough, this reliquary was placed on a pedestal. It had flowers and candles there. And this is a pedestal that is always used in canonization ceremonies to display relics of new saints. I thought that was very meaningful. It is always in the Pope's private chapel in the Apostolic Palace. So, again, a very meaningful day. And as you said, the Feast of Christ the King, Christ King of the Universe, the crowning of the liturgical year, because, of course, next Sunday, this Sunday, begins Advent, yes. And of course, the Pope obviously focused on the centrality of Jesus in his homily, the centrality of Jesus in creation, in history, and in the life of every human person. So a very, very special day for all the faithful. 8 million came to Rome during the year of faith to attend the various celebrations that were all organized by the Council for the New Evangelization, which was charged to oversee, if you will, all the events of the Year of Faith. Monday, Could have been a very quiet day, except for the visit of Russian President Putin, Vladimir Putin, who came to the Vatican. They visited for 35 minutes. Then the other big, big event of the week actually was Tuesday. If you look at the press conference to present the apostolic exhortation, Evangelii Gaudium, Joy. And, you know, I'd like to stress here that the word joy appears 59 times in this document, and it's something that we've heard Pope Francis talk about throughout his papacy. He talks about God's love. He talks about the joy of faith. He talks about God's forgiveness and mercy. These are totally recurring themes in his papacy. There are social aspects he get on, the economic aspects. He obviously focuses a great deal on a church, as he says, of the poor and for the poor. But, I mean, I know Vatican Radio has done other shows on this, and it's almost a shame we're limited in time, being unable to give a summary of this beautiful document. Oh, and the interesting thing is, I was doubly honored, if you will, last Sunday, not only receiving the exhortation from the Pope's hands, but being entrusted to us as journalists, being entrusted with this document for 48 hours, because it could not be made public until 48 hours after we received it. When there is an embargo and it's broken, that's not a very good thing to do on the part of a journalist. So I was honored to be entrusted with that responsibility of keeping the document quiet for 2 days. So, but I really would urge our listeners, it's online. And the English is online. The printed version, we're kind of still waiting for that in the press office. But it's online, folks. And you know what? It's a very direct, easy to read, almost conversational style that Pope Francis uses. So don't think, oh my gosh, a papal document, I'll have to have a theology degree. Not true at all. It's very easy to read. Read just parts of it at the time. And my immediate impression when I read it was two things. This is an outline by Francis for his papacy. This is what I want to achieve as Holy Father. Secondly, what I saw was a blueprint for the church. The church that he wants, this church he wants to go out on the peripheries, he said. It's not just Rome. It's not just the Apostolic See, the Roman Curia, the Vatican. He wants to see a church that is out there. It is for all people, embraces all people. It brings people back into the faith. And my impression is that not only does he want the church to be, as they say, of products often, new and improved, my understanding was that if we better the church, if we become better as Christians, society will perforce become better, and then really the world as the whole. So you start out with an individual, then you've got a family, then you've got society, and then you've got the world. And that may sound very ambitious, but why on earth wouldn't it be possible? Just read the document, and you'll know it's possible, but it counts on our goodwill as Christians, too. So read it, folks. You will be amazed, delighted, and you will learn a lot. And that's all I can say about that document. It's beautiful inside and out, and enjoy it.
Wednesday, we get to the weekly general audience.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. This was amazing. It was very, very cold and overcast, a gray, typical, very cold November day. And the Holy Father, of course, came out in the white enclosed Jeep. And it was like, oh, my gosh. I got cold just looking at him standing in the Jeep. But then he was all bundled up in a white, hopefully very heavy wool coat, scarf around his neck, didn't have any gloves on. So he'd put his hands like a muff. He'd put his hands up his sleeve when he wasn't holding a piece of paper. And it was interesting because all of the Monsignori from the Secretary of State who read the Pope's discorso in the various languages, they got up to the microphone without their heavy overcoat. But when they went back to their seat, they put it on as fast as they could. So it was a cold day, but a very consoling, at least I found this consoling feature, was that the stage-like area, the platform on which the Holy Father sits during an audience or where the altar is for Mass, the covering, the roof, if you will, the ceiling over where the Holy Father is sitting, and not only does it have a lot of lights for a day like Wednesday, which was very gray, it has heating elements. It has radiant heating elements. And so hopefully that kind of helped.
Warmed him up.
Warmed, yes. And actually, the Pope began his audience by saying, he said, good morning and congratulations. He said, because you're brave to be here in the square with the cold weather, many compliments. And then that's when and by the way, 70,000 people were in that square. That was the estimate for a Wednesday. I mean, that's amazing, a weekday in November. And of course, that number of people you can't bring inside. Paul VI Hall doesn't hold that many, or the Basilica. But the Pope did announce Wednesday, he said, I'm going to bring to a close the catechesis on the Creed carried out during the Year of Faith. And he said, in the next catechesis, I want to consider the subject of the resurrection of the flesh, taking two aspects as presented in the Catechism of the Church, namely, our dying and rising in Jesus Christ. So he began that catechesis, and people applauded madly, but it's very interesting to hear applause when hands are covered with gloves. It's a very kind of a muffled sound, exactly. But the cheers were great on Wednesday, too. So I know we kind of run out of time so fast on these things, but Thursday and Friday, a meeting on Thursday, Pope Francis welcomed the participants in the plenary assembly of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue. And he did speak of his exhortation in this Evangelii Gaudium, because he does speak very clearly, openly, warmly of relations, the need to have good relations and dialogue with other religions. And then on Friday, the Holy Father had a meeting with the Union of Superiors General. But interestingly enough, on Thursday, there was kind of a little personal element of news that was released by the Vatican. And I know our listeners, when they watch television, they sometimes say, now, who's that man next to the Pope at an audience or something? Very often, it is his personal secretary, a Monsignor from Malta, Alfred Schwereb, who previously was in the office of the prefecture of the papal household. Anyway, the Pope named his private secretary as a delegate on the commission for the Institute of Works of Religion. We all know that as the Vatican Bank. And also as a delegate on the Commission for the Organization of Economic and Administrative Structure of the Holy See. My understanding is this is more or less a formal announcement of some work that Monsignor Schwereb has been doing anyway. You kind of wonder then, you know, how much time will he have left to do the secretarial work of the Holy Father? Will the Holy Father add to his staff, because he does have a Spanish-speaking Monsignor? So very interesting news about his personal secretary. And my word, here we are, the weekend already, and other meetings and
Thanksgiving.
Vespers with, yes, Thanksgiving. I'm here on my day off, you know, doing this, right? We have a four-day weekend at EWTN. America takes Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off. So lots of people out shopping as you and I speak in the studio.
So thank you very much, Joan. See you next week.
Exactly.
And our thanks there go to Joan Lewis, EWTN's Bureau Chief here in Rome. And that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget, we won't be back again at this same time tomorrow, but we will be back again at this same time next weekend. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.rv.va. And then click on the English World icon. You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.